Today is Wednesday, November 1st, 2023. This is part two of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Alice Talakte. And Alice spells her last name T-A-L-A-K-T-E. My name is Tom Martin. Good morning, Alice. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm doing fine.
Good. Alice, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Okay, that's fine with me.
Thank you. Alice, when last time we talked, we talked about your going up to Oregon to boarding school, and that was in the late 1950s. I wanted to ask you about something that happened way before then, which was about the Glen Canyon Dam. Can you tell me what you remember about any of that? Any of that was happening maybe in the 1940s or 1950s?
Well, I don't quite remember all the story, and I think we have heard something, or my dad heard something about, usually my dad will just mention that he can tell the whole story, but there was something about that there would be a dam on the river, on the Colorado River, and of course I didn't know, didn't pay attention to that. But this was around about maybe 46, 47, and I haven't gone to school yet.
Okay.
So we have, there's a place called, I think on the map as Cedar Mountain.
Okay.
And that's called, and we live on the kind of like the north side of it. I mean, that's where we utilize. My parents used to live on top of, at the farms up there, and but they moved down. And this is my father's old kind of like old homestead.
Okay.
But anyway, that year, I think it was in the fall, that jeeps start coming through, and right through where we have our hogans, our hogan, and that was, they were surveying for perhaps a railroad track that would come up from Cedar Ridge area and along on somewhere near on the east side of the of the Vermilion Cliffs, and eventually go through, and it would come down to Page. I wasn't too familiar with this area, the Page area, because we've been living out there, but my father's family had been living in this area like going back to the early 1800s, I believe.
Okay.
And so, but anyway, that we've seen that, and at that time, I'd never seen jeeps, and well, my father had vehicles, but you know, there's a bunch of people coming through, the surveyors, and they, my father told us to leave, you know, the survey equipment alone, so we did.
Okay.
So that was, I'm not exactly too sure about it, but then it kind of like calmed down, and didn't hear any more about it. So that is all I can tell you. So and later on, I've learned that it was the construction of a dam somewhere, and when they talked, well, there was no dam in the area, and just a bridge. So that's what they were talking. People talk about having a bridge across the canyon, across the Colorado River somewhere, up from the Navajo Bridge at Marble Canyon.
Okay.
So I was not too familiar with this area.
So that would be a second bridge that they were building up in Glen Canyon, up near today's Page.
Yeah, that they were going to build.
Okay.
And then we didn't hear any more, and by then I wasn't paying too much attention. And of course, I guess they may have had the also surveyed the what is now the Navajo Route 20 from the Gap to Page.
Okay.
And I remember that it was paved from the gap to the first windmill. If you've been on that road, right?
And yes.
You know, further,
yes.
Past the screen?
Yep.
Yeah. That's as far as they paved.
Okay.
And then they stopped. At first it fell apart, and eventually it came back to a very bumpy, almost half dirt road again. So this was back in the in the early 60s.
Okay.
Because I was going to school then, and so I remember the part of the highway there. It was paved. It was on the highway. It was just the road was paved.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And when did they start the cut? That would have been right next to your place.
And then we also moved where I said I was born, right there at the, mile marker 530. I think that's what it is. We also live on the east side of that place. And they start surveying, and to tell you the truth, I don't remember the road coming from the cut. There's not any yet because they were surveying yet.
Okay.
And where they came from, I really don't know because I was, I was already going back to Oregon, back to the Pacific Northwest, and being there. And then one time I came home, and my younger sister and I saw them surveying and putting their survey markers in.
Okay.
So we used to go there in the evening and pull up those stakes and survey. And then we tried to erase our tracks by putting a juniper branch and trying to erase our tracks. The next day they would be back and do the same thing.
Oh my, yep.
So I tried stopping the road, but it didn't work.
Mm.
But I appreciate that they put it in the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, so when I came back home in 1963, they were working on the dam then, and then we used to come up, pile into my dad's truck and go to the, down the highway and watch them blast the canyon or the cliffs. Where the dam site is going to be.
Okay.
So that was kind of like an entertainment for the afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah. So other than that, I really don't remember. But my father had to work for the Navajo tribe.
Okay.
As a policeman and a ranger and whatever the situation that he had to investigate. That he would travel to these places, and he had a truck that he had purchased, and so that was our transportation. And not too many people had vehicles at that time.
Mm.
And sometimes we would get people would say, "Well, stop by and pick us up too." So other families would pile in, especially kids. So that was our entertainment.
Okay. All right.
So
did your parents ever talk about the dam, about what they thought about it?
That there was all the goodies that have been promised that there would be water available. So that was probably what because where we live, there are some natural springs where we live, and these usually do not dry out, and it will continue to seep through through the years.
Okay.
And that it's really water or sheep and horses and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the water being available and that there would be water backing up, and I have no idea what they were talking about.
Hmm.
But my father got flown over the Glen Canyon, and not that he was an official from the people that were investigating and checking and really how far the water was going to back up. You know, to me, it didn't make any sense because I haven't seen, I only seen the river down at Marble Canyon on the bridge.
Okay.
And, well, to me, that was just like, oh, okay. So my father would talk about that. He's got flowing around Navajo Mountain and San Juan River. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And not that he was on any official duty. It was just, you know, I guess it's just out of courtesy of the surveyors. So, and they thought, oh, but there's going to be water available. You know, everybody was just all excited about that.
Mm.
Yeah. The amount of water that was going to be stored, I didn't have any idea.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was all happening... Well, while you were still in Oregon?
Yeah, I was going to, I was still going back and forth, and finally I came home in 63.
Okay. And were
yeah.
were you graduated from high school then?
It was the year before.
I mean 62.
Yeah. In 62, yeah. But I worked there, and then in the summer I came back to Phoenix, and I've never been in Phoenix either. So, 114 was the hottest day I ever experienced because weather around Portland and all of that is nice and cool and
yeah.
It rained.
Wow.
I thought I was going to die.
Why did you go to Phoenix?
I was looking for a job.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I did get a job working in a small cafe. So that was kind of like my first job. Well, in Oregon, I work in small stores and things like that, besides babysitting and trying to make money. And I've lived with families. I live with a family who has, I think they had three kids. And then when I was still in high school, I moved in with his parents, and they were elderly couple.
Mm-hmm.
So I live with them in a big house, too. So I help take care of the house and look after the two people. But they were healthy. You know, she was driving. She was gone all day to meetings and things like that. Or,
okay.
You know, parties and whatever. So I had fun.
All right. And also, last time, just after we stopped the interview, you mentioned your mother's brother, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me what you remember about him?
I barely remember him, and Joe really, really took care of all of the kids, you know, my brothers and sisters. He was born before me, and I was too. This is before my younger sister, Lou, was born. So she was born, she's about 3 years after me.
Okay.
And I remember him going to the, we live somewhere near the gap, above the gap towards Kaibato, on that dirt road to Kaibato.
Okay.
We lived back in there too, and he utilized those areas. And my parents didn't have that many sheep. My grandmother had a lot of goats. So I grew up on goat's milk too.
Okay.
But anyway. My uncle would go down to the trading post and buy some candy, orange or apples, and we would wait for him to come home, watch the trail.
Oh.
If we see him were all excited because we knew he had something. And my sisters, older sisters, said that my Nellies, who my dad's parent mother, used to take them to their house and try to keep them. But they get said, no, we want to go home. They would whine. And Uncle Joe would come on his horse, and he didn't even have to get down. They just ran to him and hold up their hand and threw one in the front and threw one in the back and took them home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember doing it because I was a lot younger and maybe about 3-4 years old. I just pretty much stick around, but I waited for him. And something happened that my mother said that he also worked. So he worked on the bridge at Marble at Cameron.
Okay.
And then he's been to he worked in mines and railroad tracks and whatever job was available, but he never went to school. And he's my aunt, who's younger than him, has gone to school, and she, her and her friends sometimes would pick him up and bring him home. So I don't remember him. I don't even have any picture of him.
Hmm.
And so he was a collector. He bought shoes, towels, and hats. And I didn't know it at that time, but it was some years later that I found out. But anyway, when he got sick, he got to the point where I guess they were playing. Somebody got into a fight with him and threw him. He was not that tall. He was short. But for some reason, somebody said, what did they call him? Kia'ani Nez, which means the tall Kia'ani. My dad was known as Janine Nez, and he was tall. But anyway, maybe it was just a joke or something. But anyway, he had hurt his back and became paralyzed.
Huh.
And they have to carry him around, you know, for everything. And then I saw them feeding him, you know, like they would lay pillows or something to rest his head on, to raise his head up. So my grandmother would put his head on her knees and feed him that way. So as soon as everybody was gone, I would get up there and find whatever, even water, and then I would feed him too and put his head on my lap and talk to him. And then I didn't have any dolls or anything like that. We made our own. So, but as far as dolls that people, that children play with today, no, we have nothing like that.
Hmm.
So he was a baby. I would talk to him and he would laugh. And I had fun with him.
Nice.
But before it happened, when he was sharpening tools like axe, he would collect the drop-off and throw it in the fire, and it would spark, and that was kind of exciting.
Wow.
For me to watch.
Huh.
Yeah. So, and then when he passed away, which I did not know, and I guess my mother and grandmother told my siblings not to tell me that he had passed away. At that time, it was not a burial. People still buried their deceased in a tree or
okay. The
ground and just cover them up with branches and rocks and stuff like that. But anyway, I guess I miss him, and I would ask, when's Uncle Joe coming home? I didn't call him. We just call him being my uncle. In the Navajo way, he would be, I call him my son.
Okay.
So I would say, I said, wait, not that. When's my baby coming home? And nobody said anything, really. They didn't tell me. See, and he had a black stallion that he rode. And so And I've seen him coming back on his black stallion, you know, just like that for a long time. And they never even told me until I came home.
Okay.
And one day my sister, you know, there's a tree right up there where east of where we live. She said, there are. I found hats and shoes and some other stuff. And I asked Mom what it was, whose it was, and she told me that was her brother Joe's.
Oh.
So she told me there were felt hats and shoes, boots. Mm. Man, he bought these things and brought them home. And I was kind of upset with my mom. This is in my, back in 64, 65.
Okay.
And I was upset with her for, they never told me.
Mm.
And it's been because I kept talking about him for a long, long time. Because I miss him, that's why.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, yeah, that was kind of like my, and then I was, one time I went back up there recently, and I couldn't find those because we have new neighbors on top of the hill. They built their house there, and them believing that, you know, that the ghost spirit are still with
mm-hmm.
things alone with them. So I guess they must have gathered them up and probably burned them.
Okay,
I was about that too, but I decided to let it go.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just some, and then I was thinking I should have at least got one hat or something like that.
Yeah, to remember Joe with.
Well, to remember my uncle by.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's go back to Phoenix in 1962. You're 21 years old now. It's hot in Phoenix.
You're right.
And you got a job as a waitress.
While I was working for looking for a job, I met another girl, an Indian girl in Flagstaff, and then we took the bus to Phoenix.
Ah.
And we were both looking for a job, and went to interviews, and then I ended up taking care of a couple of family's kids that I would go to.
Oh.
I was looking for YWCA, so that's where we were living at, and it was kind of fun and exciting to be on my own mm-hmm. language, you know.
Yep.
Didn't have, but anyway, and then later on, I did get a waitress job, and that sort of became my occupation, I guess. And I don't know whatever happened to the girl that I met. She moved on. So.
Okay.
And then I moved back to Flagstaff, and I did a job there as a waitress. This was back in 63.
Okay.
And I worked as a waitress, and then I was also working in a small gift shop. So, living in a small place, you know, for kind of like about the size of my bathroom, really.
Oh my gosh. Where were you working, and where did you live?
Well, I live in a small apartment, and I live in that there, and I work as a waitress and also in a small shop when I'm off. So I was trying to make money. And at that time, the highway was being built, the freeway.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So that was pretty good. They were pretty good tippers.
Okay.
So, well, at that time, $2.50 tip was a big money.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And do you remember the name of the restaurant that you worked in?
Let me see. The name of the restaurant is no longer there. Mm. What the heck was the name? It was Virginia's, and what was their last name? It was just sort of like, you know, a small place. It's large. Gosh.
Was it right?
These places, yeah.
Was it right on the Route 66 there?
Yeah, right through, just right down, just off the main street right now.
Okay.
Right from the train station.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's where it was located. And then there was a Western store, and I also got a job there later, and after I got sick, so I couldn't waitress anymore.
Ooh. What happened?
I was just got the flu or something, and forever to recover. So I got a job at that Western store.
Okay.
It was the Dominic's were the last name, Dominic's Western Store or something like that. for a while.
That must have been a cut in pay, because at least as you were waitressing, you got tips, and that might work out okay.
Yeah, that worked okay, because I saved my tips for, you know, like I need a new pair of shoes or something. My tips went for my clothes.
Yeah.
But anyway, when I was still a waitress, they have two sons, and they were friends going to high school, and they were friends with this guy, and they used to come in. And then I knew another girl from the Indian school in Oregon, and she was there, and one of the guy that used to come in was her boyfriend.
Okay.
And so she asked me if she wanted me to introduce him or introduce me to some of his friends, and I said no.
Mm-hmm.
I was not going to have a boyfriend or anything like that. But anyway, the two brothers came in with this guy here, and I didn't pay any attention to them, and I come to find out that was Mel.
Okay, this is your husband-to-be.
Yeah.
So this is 1963, and you're waiting tables, and he comes in with these other guys.
Yeah, and then I guess they were saying, why don't you meet her? And she said, she never pays attention to me anyway. So I just see them, and that was it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I was there on business serving food.
So yeah, you were working.
Yeah. But then back in 1964, at the end of 63, no, wait a minute, let me go back. And I went back again. I came home and took care of the animals, of our stock, livestock at home, helped my mother. And in I had an auto accident, which seemed to follow me.
Oh,
like
no.
That's it. And anyway, I have an accident. I was seriously injured.
Ooh.
I was hospitalized for 6 months, and because I got a nerve pinch in my back.
Ah.
And then after I got well, I went back to Flagstaff, and I worked at a Chinese restaurant. And this was right, again, on 66, right as used to be where you just enter town, but now it's all developed. But anyway, so I worked there.
Do you remember the name of the people that ran that restaurant?
The Chinese restaurant?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, come to find out, when I worked for the school here, I met a Chinese student, and she just came from China, and her last name was Huang, and F-O-N-G, I believe it was,
yes.
Anna. That was her family, or her members of her family that owned that place.
Well, this is so wonderful, because across the street from us here in Flagstaff is a woman named Janet Wong, and she's 91 now, and her husband owned a restaurant in Flagstaff, I'm forgetting his name, but I wonder if it was the same, if you worked for him.
I don't know, but they were brothers.
Yeah.
And again, I just did my business, and then those highway workers who were also good tippers.
Okay.
So one day my sister and her friend, and this was in March, and they said, there's a dance going on over at the Armory. I said, would you like to go? And so I didn't have any shoes. And I said, I don't have any new shoes. I don't have any clothes. And they said, come on over and take a look at our clothes. You can borrow. So I borrowed their shoes, moved mine, and I think my pants or something. So we went to the dance, and my sister was dating this Hopi guy, and he came with a cousin. And so that's how I met Mel.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And he just got back from the service. He was in Germany, because in those days, if there's only one son that is in the family, they can't be sent to, of course, if they wanted to, they can't be sent to the war zone, like okay. Vietnam.
Okay.
So he was in Germany, and that's where he came back, and we met, and he was kind of shy. So... And that evening, he took. We all went to the restaurant, and all of course, hamburger was a thing that I could order pretty quick. So he passed me all his onions and tomatoes, and he says, "I don't eat those things." And I said, "Okay." So that's how I met him. But in the end, to tell you the truth, he ended up loving onions and tomatoes.
Okay.
Because I make salad.
Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I wanted to ask you about, at that time in Flagstaff, there was every year, there was an all-Indian powwow. Do you remember that?
Well, I don't know. For some reason, I was not, most of the time I was by myself, and because all my friends were either... They were young and married and have their kids, and they just didn't go out. So I didn't go. Well, that when I met Mel, yes, we went to the powwow, but that was about the only time.
Okay.
And then there used to be a rodeo that my cousins, my dad's family, our cousins, operated that. Above the gap at Second Windmill, there's a rodeo ground there.
Oh, wow. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah. Well, anyway, so my my cousins, our dad's cousins, really, from his clan, built that. And the father had been in World War II, and he was known as Nabahi Naz, which means a tall warrior. And they live in Flagstaff. So since they have cattle and horses and things like that, they start putting a rodeo on the lawn. So before I married Mel, I decided to kind of like show him around, because we were hanging out together a lot by then after work.
Okay.
And so I brought him up. We stopped at the rodeo. And saw a lot of families, and then from there we went on to my parents, my mother's house, our place. She didn't have a house, she has a whole one. So we went there, and my mother was very cordial. And of course, one of her thing was that she used to tell us, don't ever married outside your tribe, either to the Lakona or to any other tribe.
Huh.
Well, here I brought home a Hopi.
Oh, my.
But she accepted him and was nice to him.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I thought it'd be, so I decided, well, she's okay with the. I have an older sister who had a subdural hematoma, I guess, some kind of a brain damage way back when she was younger, and it, she eventually ended up in Albuquerque to be operated on, but she became paralyzed and blind.
Oh.
She was home. My mom taking care of her, and she was excited. So, what he's here again?
Hmm.
She heard my mother say, "Don't ever marry anybody outside the Navajo tribe."
Yeah.
But anyway, so we walk up to another sister who was herding sheep. We went up to her and asked if we could herd sheep that day. And Mel was all excited. He says, "I used to herd sheep with my grandfather down in on the Hopi Reds and around the Kitsamobi area."
Yeah.
Yeah. We call them K Town now too.
Okay, so, Kitsamobi. Kitsamobi. Yeah, I'm stumbling here. That's good.
It's on the map. I don't have the spelling.
Yeah, Kitsamobi.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what was it like to meet Mel's family for you?
They were nice. They were cordial. And met his parents. He took me home. Maybe waited a month before he said, "Let's go in here." And, of course, Grandma T. Cook. She cooked all the time. She would have to boot everywhere.
Hmm.
But she was tiny and never fat.
Okay.
So they were fine with it. And his sisters were also home. They came home. Some of them graduated and working in different places like Washington, D.C. And Bonnie was still going to college or to the university there.
Wow.
And we were married. So it was fun. And then we got married in September of that year.
1964?
No, this was in 1968. Yeah.
Okay. And when Mel was overseas, this was during Vietnam.
Yeah.
What did he do in Germany?
Well, they have the some sort of missiles that they eventually got shipped to Vietnam.
Okay.
And he was they got that ready to be shipped out. So he was in kind of I forgot what he called it, some kind of an army specialist.
Okay.
Yeah, and they took care of the armory or equipment that would be sent to Vietnam.
And where was he born?
He was born in K-Town.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kitsamobi, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he was born there and lived there, and then eventually every summer after school. Well, they lived at the Grand Canyon because his father had also been in World War II and came home and went to work for the Babbitt brothers.
Oh.
Yeah. So they moved around from what is now right near the that casino out there. What is the name of the place now? We're getting to the South Flagstaff.
Oh, the, let's see, the Navajo Casino? The not Cliff Castle, it's the...
Right.
Oh.
I guess the Babbitt brothers used to have a small trading post there. That's where Grandpa worked, and then eventually worked at different places, and then transferred him to the Grand Canyon, and that's where most of his sisters were born there. They lived there for a long time.
What was Mel's father's name?
Kenneth Lochte.
Yes.
Yeah, and Mel's older brother is Kenneth Lochte Jr., which he passed away too. So then after that, they moved from Grand Canyon. When Mel was in high school, the family moved to Winslow. Not Winslow, I'm sorry, Williams.
Okay.
And I don't know if I really didn't get the story there. May have looked at another supermarket there.
Okay.
And Mel stayed in the Grand Canyon because he was in football and all the school sports, and they didn't want him to, the coach didn't want him to go.
Yeah.
So they told him that he would live at their house, but Mel said, I didn't live in their house, I live in the garage.
Oh, my.
He was so cool sometimes, and so in order to see, he wanted to graduate it from Grand Canyon, but then he couldn't take state living in a garage.
Mm.
The family moved to Flagstaff by then, so Grandpa had retired, and that's where he graduated from.
So he graduated in Flagstaff?
Right. And then without his parents' knowledge, he signed up to go into the service.
Okay.
Yeah, and so he was ready to leave Utah.
Well, he was following in his father's footsteps as well.
Yeah, and then his brother also was in the Air Force. He was in the Air Force.
Okay.
He had returned, and they live in Winslow. He married and have kids there too. He married a Hopi though. Most of them married a Hopi except for, I'll take it back. Bonnie had married a white guy, and Chris had married a Tewa.
Okay.
In Mexico. And then the other one married a Mexican. So he was mixed too. But anyway, so
you guys got married in September of 68. What do you remember about your wedding time?
Well, to tell you the truth, by then I was out of the job for a while because after my accident, and I was just recovering from my injuries when I flown to Albuquerque for examination and for some very serious physical therapy, and I don't know why Tuba wouldn't take me at that time.
Hmm.
They flew me, so I didn't have much money because I was having difficulties from missionaries who used to be at that copper mine. Were stationed in Flagstaff, so they said I would stay with them, and so I can meet all my appointments. So I was staying there. So I had to buy the material and make my own wedding dress.
Oh, wow.
So it was a small wedding we had it up in Chupa.
Okay.
Yeah. And it was just a very small because we decided, I was not well yet. But Mel was also, he's a massager because his uncle, George, was kind of had that gift. And I had him massage maybe a few times after that. Oh, man, he just like, he has a magic hand.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah, so when I was in the hospital in Tupa after my accident, I was unconscious for about three days.
Oh, my.
Yeah, and after I came out of it, I had to be helped everywhere. I had to sit up out of bed so I could eat and things like that, but my face was pretty much all cut up, and my teeth pretty nearly, because I hit the vehicle glass hit me in my face.
Oh.
Yeah. And I really couldn't. I remember during the when I was in the hospital, I was working for the tribe, and the kids that I was working with came and seen me. And I remember one of them. I could hear, but I couldn't talk, and I couldn't even open my eyes. I tried because my face was still swollen.
Mm.
I heard one of the boys say, "Now she was beautiful. And look at all her face." And I was going, "I want to take a look in the mirror."
Oh no!
So I was probably in a big mess, and I had long hair at that time. Because before, when I had my accident, it was on a Friday, and there was a dance at Kaibutu, and my cousins wanted to go there. So I had rollers in my hair, these big rollers because of my long hair.
Uh-huh.
And they could not take out my rollers. They just cut my hair off with it.
Oh, wow.
When the missionary Ruby came in to see me, she looked at me and she started crying.
Oh.
Man, I was thinking to him, I'm a mess. She did finally show me that my hair was just like long hair next to the skull hair.
Wow.
I look horrible. But anyway.
But by then, Mel was like, "Yeah, but you're my partner." And
what's that?
Well, Mel stuck with you during the accident, during your recovery.
No, this is after.
After. Okay.
Yeah, let me see, this would be, yeah, this is the following year, because my accident was in the summer of 67, 68. We had a big snow out at home, and then I came home, and I could not go back, because the snow was about maybe 4 foot on the res.
Wow.
And so I stayed home. But I, my therapist makes some kind of makeshift exercise. And she let me move my hand with me, because I couldn't move my hand. And I have to have this thing around my finger in order to brush my teeth.
Oh my gosh.
I couldn't hold it. But anyway, so I went through all that stuff. And then after Mel, the next year, that's when I met Mel. We got out of the service. But then I told him that, you know, I had issues with my, sometimes I can't get out of bed and stuff like that, or sitting up, or I can't hold anything.
Mm.
So that ended my waitress job.
Got it.
Yeah, but anyway, so he started massaging me. Well, his aunt did at the hospital. I didn't know it was his aunt.
Ah.
This Hopi woman would come in. She was very talkative, and she was loud, and when she said, "Move over here, you have to move." I mean, I tried, but I told her, but she started massaging me, and she was really good. So one day she said, "Talati, is there a Chinese name?" And I'm going like, "No, it's a Hopi name." And apparently that is not the way you say it.
Huh.
And somebody told me it's Hadalati. So they can understand the talak in the T.
Okay. Yeah, so the T is silent?
Yeah, talak. Yeah. So
huh.
But I spell with a D and pronounce a little bit differently.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway. But she ended up being one of my aunt in law.
Oh, nice.
So she, and the father, or Mel's uncle, his mother's brother, also worked for Babbitt's, and he worked at that trading post forever and ever since he came from back from the surf. I guess he worked before when he was going to school, too.
Okay.
And his name was George. And also a really, really nice person. So,
which trading post did George work for?
It was Babbitt's, the Tuba trading post.
Tuba, okay.
Yeah, this is at Tuba. And he worked there. And when I was going to Tuba boarding school, I'd seen him there. And at that time, my father would give me maybe like 50 cents or 75 cents or something. And we'd go down and walk through the store with the matron, the lady who takes care of us at the dormitory. And I like ribbons, so I used to buy little ribbons with money.
Cool.
And my father, by then, also was not working. So he used to ride horses from where we lived to Tuba. And he would tie his horse up there, and George, and Uncle George, later on, he became my Uncle George anyway. He would feed the horse and water it for him.
Oh.
Walk over there. Oh, man. Seeing the horse was about heaven for me. Yeah, I wanted to write, but my dad said, no, you're wearing a dress. You can't write.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you were a good writer.
I've always loved horses, too. And late since I was, I don't remember. But anyway, I think I'm kind of like jumping around.
You know what? Maybe this is a good time to put a comma in this oral history series, and we'll talk again. What do you think?
Okay, that would be fine.
Okay. Well, let's then conclude part two of A Grand Canyon Oral History with Alice Delatte. My name is Tom Martin. Today is Wednesday, November 1st, 2023. And Alice, thank you so very much.
Okay.